Earthwatch, WBAI, 120 Wall Street, or send an email to your host, Robert Knight. That's RKNITHT at WBAI.org. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf, coming up with Jim Freund.
The roots run deep, the soul by the bird, protect our people, a sacred birth. Not us first, but where you belong, where many old spirits dance her song. Piece of paper, a devil's lie, for in this you let my people die. To return our land, our lives, through the earth, the sky will pay the price. Through the earth, the sky, the soul will rise. Yes. Piece of paper, a devil's lie, for this you let my people die. To return our land, our lives, through the earth, the sky will pay the price. Through the earth, the sky, our soul will rise.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Okay. When I can, we do comics. No, not Gilbert Gottfried. With us this morning, Danny Figueroff, Mark Fain, and Ken Gibb. And you're tuned to WBAI in New York City. We're talking Betty Boop here. Listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Before we go any further, announcements. There are no announcements. No, there is an announcement. Tomorrow night, I gave all the details last week, so I'm just going to tell you the basics, and then you can go to your favorite search engine, Google or wherever, yeah, and look it up. And tomorrow night at this place called the Way Station, which is in Brooklyn and in Prospect Heights, and models itself as a combination, get the steampunk and Doctor Who bar. You know, it's like we needed another one of these. Is going to be holding the Wold Newton Extravaganza reading series, another evil competitor to my own reading series, the New York Review of Science Fiction reading series. And tomorrow night is N.K. Jemisin, the wonderful, incredible writer whose third book is coming out, and she'll be on the show live somewhere in December. Nora and I haven't set the date yet, but we're going to. And Michael Swanwick, the happily ubiquitous, when he's in between novels, Swanwick appears everywhere. He was at the last New York Review of Science Fiction reading event, feating the work of Murray Leinster, along with, which is actually pronounced Leinster. Real name was Will Jenkins, but he named his character, his pseudonym, after the county in England. So it's Leinster, apparently. And which is funny, for he was such an American man. And his daughter was there, Billy Stallings, who just wrote a biography of it, and Swanwick came along. So Swanwick's in many places. So tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the Way Station, W-A-I-A-Y. I have not yet ever made it to one of the Wold Newton things because, as I said, they like the great KGB Fantastic Fiction reading series, which next week features Jack Womack, and I've forgotten who the other one is. They're all evil because they're not mine. We need a fourth. That way there will be a really good reading series every week, a really good science fiction reading series every week, and then I'll be happy. So, and next week, next Wednesday, will be the next KGB with Womack. Okay, so, now I've wasted 6 minutes into the show, so that's actually brief for me. When things... Oh, okay. Was it 2 months ago? 3 months ago? Three events ago, 2 months, however, at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, we had just, you know, it was one of the coolest nights because we had, actually for the third time, Chris Claremont was reading, and he had read the first time with Rachel Pollack, and I don't remember the second time. And I'll tell off-air story about the first time. And, yeah, it's something I won't do on the air. Danny's looking. And Wheezy Simonson. Now, I thought, Louise Simonson? No, Wheezy. Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And this, of course, means, well, yes. Oh, so, of course, you get Wheezy. You get Walt Simonson. And apparently you get Wheezy and Walt and Chris. Along comes Danny Fingeroth. And I am just thinking, we've got like half of the bullpen right here. And I am not a comics fan in the way Ken Gale of WBAI, who did the show Nuff Said for how many years?
9 years as a regular show, and then another 7 years as a sort of a sneaking it in show.
Yeah, but it began on some other show, didn't it?
Yeah, certainly did.
I always have to take credit.
Hour of the Wolf, about 20 years and 2 months ago.
Yeah, about 20 years and 2 months ago, and Jim Shooter was the guest.
Yes.
That's right. So you start small, work your way up from there. It's the way Ken does this kind of stuff. And now, so I am no expert on comics. I'm pretty good on skiffy type of stuff. But as comic books, I'm simply an avid reader. And even then, only up to a point. I think that, and that point might have been, sorry, Danny, and something that you wrote, Howard the Duck. No, I know you only did the movie.
I did the movie, yes.
Well, that's the thing that makes it bad. I mean, I love this. I love the Steve Gerber stuff.
Yeah, you're not a fan, but you know, I did the comic adaptation of the Howard the Duck movie. Okay, so just so we're clear.
Absolutely, and I've had two letters published. I had one full page letter in Son of Satan, number 8 or 9, because I complained bitterly that the pentagram was a witch's pentagram, and not a satanic pentagram.
Ah.
And I went on and on about it, how I was high and mighty with literature. I was full of it. Not that I'm not full of it now, but I was more full of it then.
I'm learning this for the first time. You were in
You didn't know that?
I knew you had an LSD in Son of Satan comics.
Yeah, I actually liked it. And unless I'm mistaken, weren't some of those issues written by George Alec Effinger?
You got me there.
He wrote a lot of Marvel comics at that time. I don't know if that was one of them.
No, well, I had a few friends who were writing for Marvel.
And JoJo R. Martin wrote for Marvel also.
Well, sure.
They were probably writing the black and white science fiction books, not the regular.
No, George Alec Effinger did War of the Worlds and some other color comics. I think I think the black and whites were in slightly later era.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Sort of like World of Wonder or something like that.
That sounds
but
right.
Not Spider-Man or Daredevil. That was no. That was not his territory.
No, not at all. Not at all. He was basically he said pimping himself. You know, he was earning a living. He'd spend a year writing a book that Doubleday would pulp the day it came out. And earn, you know, I don't know, $7,000 or $8,000 for a year's work on that novel, or he could write work for Marvel and get a decent paycheck. And there was one brownstone in Brooklyn, which had Frank Heller, who was worked with Neil Adams, as and I think he was at a point a crusty bunker, but I'm not sure about that. Yeah, this is after claiming I know nothing about this stuff.
Yeah, he knows what a crusty bunker is, and if people listening do not.
Because Frank was one of them.
He's reading it all off a teleprompter, folks. That's, yeah. That's getting all the information.
Yes, the WBAI teleprompter.
Well, Neil Adams came here and gave us a lot of posters for Warp. This is I made that connection through Heller, and we had all these Warp posters, and that's how Robert Knight came to WBAI, was to collect one of those posters. Hmm. So people blame me. Anyway, so having so I'm a reader. I'm a knowledgeable reader. But until, you know, I could not have told people, sadly, until I was doing research on Green Lantern, the difference between gold, silver, and bronze in terms of when they were. Mm-hmm. And when I had Alfie Bester was a regular on my show for a few years, and he said, oh, yeah, I was in the bronze years. I had no idea of what he was talking about. It was Ken who told me.
Well, he would have been the gold
age. He was a golden age. Yeah.
He's golden age?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, he's in the 50s.
40s.
Well, yeah, he starts in the 40s. But I thought...
I don't think he got into
I thought
the
50s. Green Lantern...
He had quit comics by the time it was the 50s. He was doing all radio by the late 40s.
Yeah, radio. He was. Yes, he did a thing called The Shadow.
Yeah, he did not do comics in the late 40s. He was out.
So I was. I thought
that sounds right. Yeah,
I thought he was doing comics in the 50s.
No.
When did Green Lantern?
The Golden Age Green Lantern started in 1940.
Right. Yeah, I'm talking about the second, the Hal
July
Jordan.
40. That was 59.
Was it that late?
Is it that late? Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, that my impression was is that a lot of the formation from that, Julie Schwartz notwithstanding, because I knew he was going to come up with that. Alfie claimed it.
No.
Alfie claimed it. I'm not saying Alfie did it.
Alfred Bester was the author of the oath that the Hal Jordan Green Lantern
which Julie claims to have done in a remarkable documentary I just saw about the history of DC
but
Comics.
Alfred Bester wrote,
you're the only person not in it, Danny.
I'm in every other DC documentary, although I'm in no Marvel documentaries. The irony of my life is I'm in a half dozen DC documentaries, but never in a Marvel one.
Wheezy is in there frequently, I'm pleased to say.
Well, she did. She wrote one of the Superman books for quite a while.
Right. And she did Wonder Woman at some point?
It's possible.
I think so, yeah.
I'm not sure.
Let's talk about Danny Fingeroth. Who are you?
I'm fine. Who are you?
Ah, thank you. Yeah. you worked at Marvel before you were... No, is there a before you worked at Marvel? There was a small company, wasn't there?
No. Okay, this is... There is misinformation for me on the internet that so far I've not been able to correct.
We could go into Wikipedia and correct it because that was part of
yes, but now everybody listening will go in and decorrect it. Or
no, it doesn't work.
My
that way
first
anymore.
Boss at Marvel was a guy named Larry Lieber, who is of course Stan Lee's brother.
And I was going to ask,
and today they do the Spider-Man newspaper strip together. Larry had been, of course, the writer on many of the early Iron Man, Thor. He was the scripter from Stan's plots of those origin stories, Ant-Man. And he had gone off with Martin Goodman when Goodman started Atlas Comics in the 70s. And he came back to Marvel about a year or two before I started there. People now say, well, Wikipedia now says that I started at Atlas Comics because Larry was my first boss. But yes, Larry was my first boss, but not
but it
Atlas
wasn't
Comics.
At Atlas, right.
I never worked at Atlas. I never even set foot in the offices there. The source of that is Dr. Jerry Bale's website because, you know, somehow whoever gave... Jerry, that information got it wrong, and he is now deceased. And although his wife is still with us, Jean is still with us, I don't think she has any particular interest in digging in and changing anything in Jerry's website. So hence, there is this strange information that I started in comics when I was actually, I think, hitchhiking across the Southwest.
Right.
So... So
I have another source of a bio, though, from a book that I understand is going to be published shortly called The Stanley Universe.
Why, funny you should mention that book. Yes, it's...
we have to do that frequently because we're not necessarily going to talk about that book all the time. So
I'm
going
to hold it up to the I'm holding up to the microphone so everybody can see it.
Yes, exactly. Okay. My God, those dark glasses. That's,
I'm really, well, the way smartphones are being made now, maybe they can see it on the radio.
Actually, I can arrange that. As a matter of fact, I've got the equipment right here,
and I'm sitting here
in his hand,
as if people could actually see it.
I'll tell you what. Keep holding that
okay.
up. And there we go. Yes.
Okay. Yes, the Stanley Universe is a book that I've been working on for probably a couple of years now. I co-edited with the legendary Roy Thomas, and it's a coffee table book in the hardcover edition, and the softcover also could be a coffee table book, but it's really a coffee table book. You can think of it as the Stan Lee vault. It's all sorts of strange and interesting stuff, much of which I found at his archives at the University of Wyoming in Laramie, which is where Stan's archives are.
Yeah.
Why are they there?
When you ask him, he says it's because Jack Benny's archives are there, and if it's good enough for Jack Benny, it's good enough for him. Now, why Jack Benny's archives are there, you would have to take up with Jack Benny's people.
Given that Jack Benny was from Brooklyn, I think.
No, he was from Waukegan, Illinois, of course.
He was?
Jack Benny, that's the most famous thing about him.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, that he was...
I only listened to the radio shows.
But where did Jack Benny meet his wife? Where did Jack Benny meet Mary Livingston?
Oh, I would assume at NBC.
And no, they met at a Seder at the Marx Brothers' house.
Oh, my God. Okay, there is a concept. I take it Eddie Rochester was probably not there.
History does not say
although, why not?
But Groucho, Chico, Zeppo, Gummo, and if Minnie was alive,
well, there
I
were five,
she was
yeah,
there.
You know, at least the five brothers.
Yeah, that was it. There were no sisters.
Yeah. And there was, of course, Minnie. And you see, I who was not a moocher. I said I wasn't knowledgeable, and that's something I really should be knowledgeable on.
Yeah, really.
Being a huge Marx Brothers fan and somewhat of a Jack Benny fan, I love The Horn Blows at Midnight.
That's a wonderful movie.
It is. Yeah. I don't love all the Jack Benny movies, and I enjoy the Fred Allen Jack Benny stuff, you know, but. I'm not glued to it.
Feud, yeah.
Love Fest, I think, is a better word for it.
So anyway, so Stan has his archives in the American Heritage Center, where they have a lot of American pop culture people, and some like Jack Benny, Barbara Stanwyck, four or five big name stars like that. And then a lot of people whose names you don't know, but whose work you know, you look at their... you know, at their resume, and you go, oh, this person won 5 Academy Awards for scoring features or for screenplays. So it's a fascinating place. Also, Dick Cheney's archives are there. Probably nothing good, you know, but he is a Wyoming...
some empty shotgun cases.
I don't think he's a native,
cases,
but he's
maybe.
A Wyoming guy. And then they have, and Mort Weisinger, the famous DC Comics editor, has his archives there. One of the...
It might depend on a curator or something like that.
I think they're aiming to specialize as far as comics and comic book editors. As a matter of fact, one of the more surreal moments of my life was while I was out there researching, I got a call from Stan to urge me to give them my archives. And I said, this is a wonderful place. They've treated me great. I could probably, spend 2 years here looking through yours and other people's archives. But it's in Laramie, Wyoming.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I know. I wish they'd open a branch in L.A. And I said, yeah, I know. I wish they'd open a branch in New York. But and so Stan and Mort and, it's the kind of place that the people in this room or the people listening to the show, if somebody said, there's been an outbreak of whatever and you can't leave for 6 months, our response would be, yeah, okay, throw me a sandwich once in a while because it's just full of... wonderful.
Now, I love places like that. It's a lot of science fiction writers are sending their stuff to Lawrence, Kansas, University of Kansas, because James Gunn is there. And he encourages a lot of people to write biographies and to get their stuff cataloged and archived and all that. The Sturgeon Award is given out through there and things like that. So there's a ton of major science fiction manuscripts and archives in Lawrence, Kansas, not the first place you would think of.
Now, having said what we both just said, I do want to plug yet something else. Coming up in March, there will be an event called Comic Columbia, a two-day symposium about comics at Columbia University that myself, Karen Green, who's the comics librarian, and Jeremy Dauber, who is in both the Germanic and Jewish and Israel Studies program of Columbia, are putting together. And part of that event is Chris Claremont giving his archives to Columbia.
Ooh, yeah, Beth Fleischer.
Right, so that
Mrs. Claremont.
So that
no,
sort of brings everything full circle. So while I certainly love the folks at the Wyoming Archives, I got to put in a plug for the Columbia Archives too.
Absolutely. You know. Is anybody recording that event?
I don't know. It's coming in. It's coming up in March.
So we'll find
I think
out,
there are many things that have not been nailed down, but we can talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I would happily record and broadcast the proceedings with Ken working on it as well. That would be a lot of fun.
Well, I see no reason not to, but I must confer with my
obviously,
with my partner,
obviously, you know. Because who knows if they have underwriting or
yes.
Things happen.
And we are looking for underwriting, so. Or overriding, or any.
And if
any
people
kind of
want
writing.
To contact you about this, they would do so how?
Ooh, they
don't.
Would,
no home numbers.
No home number. the best bet right now would be Danny Fingeroth at AOL.com.
Okay. DannyFingeroth
at AOL.com. Although within days. I will finally have the DannyFingeroth.com website. Although I've owned the URL for years, it's just...
Well, you should be taking email there.
Yes, I should
be do this stuff, so...
I should be doing all sorts of things, but I finally found somebody who actually is going to put the site together for me. So in theory, DannyFingeroth.com should exist, I'd say, within the next 2 weeks, if not less.
Very good. Very good. So, so you started at Marvel...
Right.
In 74.
I did not. I started at Marvel in 77.
77. So just erase everything that's in Wikipedia. Although you don't give the date here in your bio on your latest book.
You know, I have the impression that I can make people think I'm younger than I am. I'm at the point where I'm deciding whether I want to pretend to be younger or whether I want to be an Eminence Grease, if that's the... or Greasy Eminence, if that's the correct pronunciation. I think I'm leaning more and more towards the Eminence Grease wannabe, or somewhere in that neighborhood. So yes, no, I don't.
So what did
true.
You do at this place?
What did I do at Marvel?
Marvel
well,
yeah.
I started out working for Larry. And by the way, job hunting tips for young people: when you go for a job interview, make sure you're wearing masking tape, not just on one side of your glasses, but on both sides of your glasses.
Ooh, okay.
Because that's the important. Because you know it's the symmetry that's the important thing.
And you should have glasses.
At least one pair.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least one pair.
But during the interview,
In
fact, if you walk in with one pair of glasses and then when you sit down, switch to another pair.
That would be almost a conscious hip thing to do, as opposed to the. Thinking that it was appropriate to go for a job.
Does the thickness of the glass count?
Oh, the thicker the better.
Yeah, okay. So Coke bottles are really...
The Coke bottles, yeah. I had been a comics lunatic as a child and as an early teenager. And then I was not one of those people who kept reading them all the way through. Mm-hmm. I discovered